laid back.
With my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Stuffy here. Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 6, week 6, part 2. I'm joined by Colin Wilson, as always. What's going on with you, Colin?
Sweating some fun belt tonight. I may or may not have had couch change on Georgia Southern. Won't admit to it.
Well, what's that game still going on right now?
Yeah, it was 36-17 last I looked, so I kind of turned it off at that point because I knew it was a lost cause, and I don't want to try to live bet anything. So just.
I just got done getting teased for about 3.5 hours of that Rockies Diamondbacks game. I had the Rockies plus 1.5. They cut it to 1. Mm. First it was a 1-run game, and Archie Bradley hits a 2-run triple with 2 outs in the bottom of the 7th. The first triple by a relief pitcher in MLB history. Wow. And so they go up 3. The Rockies then hit back-to-back home runs in the top of the 8th. They cut it to 1. I'm about to cash now. I'm catching 1.5. And then in the bottom of the 8th, 2 outs, 2 on, 2 strikes again. The Diamondbacks hit another triple. And then they go up 3. Then there was a bunt with 2 outs that put another run on the board. Then Rodney gave up his obligatory run. And the Diamondbacks ended up holding on to win by 3. I think it was the first time in baseball history a team hit 4 triples in over 100 years. Wild game. The wild card games are just ridiculous.
And what I love about that is the under was getting juiced to the max right before first pitch.
I saw that. Yeah, the one thing I didn't really want to bet the total either way because Greinke's such a head case. And he had a 6-0 lead, and then they blew it. They blew so many leads in that game. But in that ballpark with those offenses, I didn't get that. So the real playoffs are set now when you actually can look at unders. So I'm going to have a piece up on the site later looking at who I want to invest in. I really, my initial thoughts are, it is baseball. So it's, a team, a staff can get hot. There's an error here or there can swing a series. But the Indians are so much better than everybody else.
Yep.
I mean, they're just their staff. Their defense, the balance in their lineup, the mix of power and speed, and then their bullpen. I mean, they have literally every phase of the game covered. There's no real weakness.
Yeah, I'm gonna hit Trevor Bauer -130 before I go to bed because I fully expect it to be probably $1.50 probably tomorrow.
Yeah, I think it's a really smart move what the Indians are doing with Bauer going game 1, the Yankees off that win with, a pen that they just had to use to the max. And then, you get Kluber game 2, and in game 1, you'll have a fully rested pen that you can extend if need be. So I think that's actually a really smart move to do. So yeah, I think I'll be with you there. A couple questions that I've received on Twitter for this podcast, whereas, with the freshness of the Redskins beat, the Redskins and the under, depending on what number you had on Monday night. And by the way, the Moose piece that I put out on Sports Action today, I said those two weren't the biggest beats of the weekend. It was Coastal Carolina. Did you see that play?
It was such, not to throw out, a name drop here, but it was such a bad beat that I believe Van Pelt is putting it in the montage. I believe it was such a bad beat that it's going in the montage. Or at least I mean, I know the Skins is, but
it was stunning. I mean I remember the announcers said the game is over. And then but the ball, no one was down, the ball was like behind the quarterback, and then someone picked it up, and then there was like people on the field, and then they just ran it in, meaning, oh my God, it's a scoop 6 from like the 50 after laterals. Right. Laterals should be banned. They do nothing good for bettors, especially underdog bettors. But that was horrifying beat. So, but anyway, since it was a weekend of fresh beats, so the fresh beats sounds like I'm doing a rap podcast. People were asking about what is your worst beat of all time. So I figured if this is the scenario that I'm going with, if everyone had to wear a badge around, so if you had to wear a badge. And it had your biggest beat, your biggest bad beat, your biggest moose of all time. You know, you wore that around and everyone wore it proudly as kind of a badge of honor. What are you picking to wear as yours?
There was a very big list of contenders, and it finally, I kind of had a little mini bracket playoff going on when I saw this on the script, and it ends with the Stanford strip six on Josh Rosen last year. I had a very large, sizable amount of money on UCLA, and I had a few side bets going on. I had local bets going on. I had bets with my family. That strip six by Stanford on Josh Rosen to take it in, that took a piece of my soul. Like, I've been gambling for 6-7 years, and there's been a lot of bad beats, and you just shrug them off, and you think that it's variance, and that you'll catch another one sometime. I wanted to retire from gambling. That it was that bad. That hurt so bad, I wanted to retire from gambling.
What was that line? 2.5?
It was 3.5 and being covered until Rosen stepped back for the step back for and the drop back to take a pass.
Yeah, so wait, but they were up, they were down 3 at the time, right?
Right.
And then Stanford drove all the way down the field, scored, and then scored again, right? They were down like 10 late. They were down 11 late, and they scored 2 touchdowns late, I think.
That's right.
And then they went up 3. The line closed, so you had a good line at 3.5, right? So the line closed, I think, at like 2.5 in that game.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I can tell you, I didn't have as much money on it as you, but I had that game, of course, because I was every strip six. I had that game teased to 8.5. I had UCLA plus 8.5 to finish a tease, and I was going to vomit. So 8.5, that's I have a touchdown in my pocket, and I'm up 11. It was right. Belk Bowl, which is mine. I'd wear the Belk Bowl.
Yes.
But, yeah, I had that teased. I lost by a half point on that, if that makes you feel any better.
Half point. Kind of feels like.
They were covering by 9:20 with like 2 minutes to go.
I know some of the college basketball ones that happen are pretty bad. You know, I know those are just soul crushing. But, you know, as a football guy, that strip six, it's just something I haven't seen. I haven't seen many strip six. I've seen pick sixes to end games, but strip sixes, it just seems to be a common thing. I mean, it happened that Indiana last year. What were they up by 10 and they were a 7-point dog? What's funny is I was in Vegas in Red Rock last year for that Indiana Penn State game, and I felt great. I felt great. I bought 7 and 7.5. I was there with Cheetah, bought 7 and 7.5. And then that morning, Indiana got whacked all the way down to 3, maybe 4. And I think they were up by 10 with just a couple minutes left. And Penn State, just amazing, shitty special teams, you know, strip sixes, pick sixes, and Indiana didn't cover that ball game.
Yeah, I had Indiana, of course.
Just amazing.
The other one that comes to mind for me is Northwestern. No, was it Northwestern? Yeah, Wisconsin, Ohio State. When it was a strip, they were at the 30-yard line last play of the game. I had Wisconsin, and it was the same, sort of like the Redskins, and they got stripped, and the ball went kicked all the way back into the end zone, and Ohio State recovered it in the end zone as time expired for a touchdown to cover. So college football can be brutal. So along those lines, though, I mean, you just mentioned that you were in the sports book for that Indiana-Penn State game. Someone asked this on Twitter, and the person that asked it, your name slips my mind, but I'll make sure that you get some gear. Someone asked, what is your best sports book moment? So this goes along the lines of what we were just talking about. What was your single greatest, or craziest moment in a sports book?
Well, by far the best moment I've ever had. I was in the Venetian a couple of years ago for that Clemson-OU playoff game. And OU was so hot. Everybody was riding them. The other playoff game, if you remember, was Alabama-Michigan State. And that was just a whack job. And Clemson and OU came on. And a few days before, I had placed, I think it was the second largest bet I'd ever made in my life. And it was, it was over the dime category, which was pretty big for me. And I walked up there and I bought the Clemson ticket the day before. The line was outrageous. Everybody was in OU gear. It was OU this, OU that. And all I could think to myself was Brett Venables, the Clemson DC, he knows Stoops. He knows OU. He knows them top to bottom. And at this time, Clemson wasn't really proven like they are now. I mean, this was their first playoff game with the first run with Deshaun Watson. And I was so positive about Clemson winning that game. it was one of those moments in the Venetian Sportsbook, which is a pretty big, you know, in size, pretty big sports book, was completely filled with OU. I was the only one clapping and cheering. And by the time the end of the game came, I was the only person that walked up to the window to cash a ticket. And that's the best thing in a sports book, is when you are the only person that walks up there with a ticket to cash afterwards. You don't have to wait in line or anything. You beat the public so bad that you guys in the sports book are the only ones that are happy that made money that day.
Yeah, it's sort of like a double whammy. You get double pleasure. It's like, you not only did you beat everyone in the book around you, but you can then just get to walk up to the window without a line.
Right.
That's a funny story. I remember mine was in my freshman year of college. Let me look up the date. Yeah, it was in 2000. Yeah, it was 2004 when I was out there for Duke UConn when Duhon hit that half court shot in the tournament. I think it was in the Final Four. When Duhon hit that shot from half court, Duke was catching 2.5, and they fouled. I think they were catching 2.5 or 1.5, whatever it was. They fouled, and UConn, you know, made the first free throw, and then I think they missed the second, and then Duhon hit a shot from half court to cover by the hook. Like, Duke was either down by 4 or 5, and then that covered a really famous play. But the sports book, because it's the Final Four, you know, Duke, UConn, the explosion on both sides. Because it's funny, that's one of those places where if you were anywhere else in the country, at a ball, you know, if you were in, you know, Durham, or, you know, if you were up in stores, like, as soon as that game got to 4 on those free throws, the game's over. Everyone's either celebrating or sad. But in the sports book, everyone is still hanging on to that last free throw, like the game wasn't over. And then it goes in. Just a kind of an amazing moment, especially considering I was still, you know, pretty young. It was over 10 years ago. It was one of my first memorable sports book moments. So I'd have to go there.
I like it. It reminds me of the Oklahoma State half court three to cover the 3 points against Michigan, right?
Oh, it's beautiful. And that goes back to my point. Everyone's always like, I'm so unlucky. And granted, if you're a sharper better, you're going to be unluckier than lucky, because you're going to be on the right side more times than not. So the chances that you'll have bad beats are greater than you'll have good beats. But even having said that, you still only remember the bad beats. Like that Oklahoma State game, it was a ridiculous cover. I had no business covering it. And yep. I forgot about it. If you ask me what my... you know, what are some great covers I've had? I completely forgot about that. Which is funny in our bias and our memory and what we can recall. So
kind of like the Tennessee Volunteers. We will never remember that we bet them last week.
Who? I didn't bet them. That's right. I told you not to bet them. I was right on that game. So as we always do on on part two of the Agenda Juice podcast, which gets released every Thursday, is we'll cover the Saturday game. So in part one, we kind of recap last weekend, look at the weekday games, and now we'll kind of get into Saturday. The format we follow is 4 parts. And the first is look ahead or look away. We look at some key look ahead spots. Then the second part is FCS or no. Look at any FCS, FBS matchups. Then we'll go down the top 25, get Colin's thoughts on some of the matchups there and what he's looking at. Keep in mind the CW9 piece, which is Colin's, you know, 9 of Colin's bets that he really likes, comes out on Friday. And then my 6-pack will come out on Saturday morning. We'll finish out with 3 and out, which is 2 questions I have for you. And then we'll finish with our... on third down, our money line underdog parlay before signing off here. So the first 2 segments should be pretty quick this week. It's actually an ugly week in college football, despite the fact that this is an odd week, and I hate this. It just adds to the shittiness of this week, is that 4 of the top 5 teams are all kick off at noon. Like, I hate that. I want them either all at 3:30 or all at night or spread out. But yeah, four of the top 5 teams kick off at noon, which is something to watch. So there could be a potential flat spot, which we'll get into potentially with Clemson. But the only really not a lot of great situational spots this weekend. I know I saw Syracuse. They are coming off 2, you know, close losses, 2 covers, you know, right around 10 points each at LSU and then at NC State. So now they come home for Pitt with Clemson on deck. Are they sleepy here?
Yeah, they're sleepy here, and I don't like the spot for Syracuse, other than I think the number's inflated. But Syracuse has a laundry list of injuries. Not Dungy, but some of the other players are beat up. They're questionable, doubtful. I think there's one that's probable, but they need to be healthy. I don't think that this is a spot that they're getting up for. I think they have their eyes on Clemson. And Pitt's still hungry to try to put something together. So for me, this is not a place to back Syracuse.
Yeah, I think it's Pitt or nothing here. I think Max Brown is probable, but something to keep an eye on. And we're going to get into that later as just a little teaser in the three and out. We're going to go through a number, and we'll cover this in the top 25 round, a number of injuries. So this is the time of year when you're going to see a lot of injuries start piling up on certain teams, and it's something to really keep an eye on because it can be significantly impactful. The other look ahead spot, the only other one that I really had written down was your Hogs. And, they have Alabama on deck. Granted, this is an SEC road game against South Carolina. It'd be a good atmosphere, but you know this team inside and out. Is this a spot they show up for?
Well, I think so. Well, I don't think they're going to win, but I don't think they're going to be. I don't think they're going to lose because they're out of it. Okay. Their star running back, one of their star running backs, that's one of the team leaders, is a graduate transfer named David Williams. He's from South Carolina. He played his first few years at South Carolina, and he is a grad transfer, and he's doing great things for Arkansas in the backfield. And he's going to have them motivated and ready to go. So there won't be a look ahead to Alabama. I just don't think Arkansas is not talented enough to be a favorite on the road in the SEC.
Yeah, it's one of those things you almost have to take South Carolina on principle. Although, after that loss, it was a tough loss last week. It's an interesting game. I don't know. I think I'll ultimately stay away. Are you going to end up being on? Did you take South Carolina? I think I saw.
I'm on South Carolina, and I'm holding. I'm not going to sell it off. This is not a contrarian play. Arkansas should not be a favorite on the road. I have Syracuse actually favored by 1.5 in this game in my numbers. So I think there's value in it, and I'm not sure who these people are that have faith in Arkansas. Maybe they look at the 18-point win against New Mexico State and think, well, they're finally back on track, but they're not. So,
yeah, I would tend to agree with you on both of those games. It's either it's Pitt and South Carolina or nothing. That's really the only things I had for the look ahead. The third one that is a semi-look-ahead spot, but I put it in the FCS or no segment because there's only one matchup this week featuring a FCS school and an FBS school, is Indiana, Charleston Southern. And just to throw it out there, Indiana, who's coming off a loss at Penn State, they do have Michigan at home next week. So from a situational perspective, it's your classic sandwich spot where, you have two powerhouses in conference and you're playing a FCS school in between. What are you seeing with this game?
There's definitely overlook on the Indiana side. They lost 20-10 to Michigan last year. 2 years ago when it was in Bloomington, Michigan won in overtime, 48-41. So this is a big deal to Indiana, and they probably are overlooking it. They have five starters this week that are listed on the injury report. But let's talk about Charleston Southern, right? Who knows their Charleston Southern? So I went out to, and I don't reference it very often, but when an FCS plays an FBS, I use the Sagarin ratings, which you can find in USA Today. And it's about the only place where you can find integrated power ratings between FCS and FBS. And according to them, this point spread should be 27. Now, I don't see anything out there. I'm sure there's something Five Dimes College Extra out there, but I haven't looked. But the line should be around 27. Charleston Southern is coming off two wins of 58-0 and 66-0. So they've scored almost 120 points and had nothing scored against them the previous 2 weeks. Now, they played some teams I've never even heard of some of these universities. But,
You never heard of Mississippi Valley State? You've heard of them.
Is that the Devil Dogs? Is that the Devil Dogs?
Delta Dogs. Delta Dogs.
Yeah, that's
Mississippi
right.
Mississippi Delta. Right. Yeah, the other team they beat, Point University, I don't know what that is.
It's like SC Upstate. I don't even know where that is either. But
it sounds like they would shave, but I don't know. Point University, but
anything for a paycheck.
Yeah, and they played Mississippi State earlier in the year.
Yeah, that didn't go so well. But Charleston Southern, I mean, what can I say? They haven't been scored upon in 2 weeks, and they put up 120 points, and Indiana's on over. Like, I think I might have a, I don't know, should I lay a little money line? Maybe throw in a KFC bucket of chicken in there for a chance at a couple thousand. I don't know. How high would it be?
No, I don't think you can go money line here, but I think that you can play. Another thing to keep in mind is Indiana has named a new starter quarterback this week, and Peyton Ramsey. So they have a new quarterback. Their defense sucks. It's a terrible situational spot. I love my FCS dogs in good situations. I'll be on Charleston Southern. However, the one thing that did give me pause when I was looking at this game, there's been some funny box scores that we've covered on this podcast. Charleston Southern at Miss State might be the most hilarious box score this year. So they lost 49-0 at Mississippi State. Their leading passer in the game for Charleston Southern was Shane Buchanel. He was 3 for 8 for 15 yards. Their leading rusher was Ronnie Harris. He had 7 catches for 18 yards. The total yards in the game were 555-39. Mississippi State had 49 points. Charleston Southern had 39 total yards. The first downs were 33-2. I mean, ridiculous. Charleston Southern had 30 penalty yards and 39 total yards. I mean, I've never seen anything like this box score. I mean, they didn't 40 yards of offense.
Don't you just call it at the end of the third quarter? I mean,
I don't know if they had a running clock, but they obviously couldn't gain a yard. And this is a Mississippi State team that, you know, just gave up 49 to Auburn. So that was the one thing that I was like, yikes. But, you know, it was the first game of the year. And their offense has looked a lot better. So they'll be a confident offense coming into it. I don't care who you play. If you're playing, you know, Shaving Points University or whoever, or the, you know, the Delta Dogs. Mm-hmm. You know, if you put up over 120 points in a 2-game stretch, you know, you're going to be coming in feeling confident on offense. They did lose to Elon by 2 points. It was a close game, and Elon's actually been a lot better than I thought they'd be. The only loss is at Toledo. They recently won at Richmond, and so yeah, I think it's a good spot to back the Buccaneers. I think are Charleston Southern, but yeah, that's the only FC yes or no. I hope it comes out over four touchdowns is what I'm hoping for.
Definitely have to put out a tweet when I see that line and probably take a little piece.
Sounds good. So let's move on from FCS or no to the third segment, which is the top 25 rundown. Let's start with these. As I mentioned before, there's 4 top 5 teams in action at noon. So make sure you're in front of a TV early. Wake at Clemson. So Clemson, I believe that line's holding it over 3 touchdowns. What do you see here?
Yeah, so we talked about this the other day, and we're supposed to be taking Wake here, and I'm just not comfortable with it. My number is 24, which means Clemson's kind of got a little bit of value, but S&P has it at 17, so it depends on who you trust. Clemson is 13th in third down percentage. I don't like to fade that. They're 7th in sacks in the nation. I don't like to fade that. But this is a short week for Clemson coming up. We already mentioned Syracuse. This Syracuse Clemson game is actually being played on Friday next week. So, you know, I'm not sure if listen, Wake's a decent team. I mean, they just gave Florida State a run for their money, and before that they were throwing up 50 spots on teams. So, I mean, Wake's a good team, and Clemson's not going to sell them short here. But how much of this do they want to cover? You know, at one point do they get up by 35 and decide to take a quarter off? I don't know. But I definitely don't want to fade Clemson in this point, and I don't want to be relying on Wake trying to get a backdoor cover here, which is what it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, but to be fair, the one – and I'm going to convince myself to bet Wake, unbelievable. But the one, again, the one set, like the sample size that we have of one, granted, is as small as you can get. But they were in a spot similar to this with Boston College at home, and that game was tied 7-7 at the end of 3. Now, granted, they won the fourth quarter 27-0, which would be good enough for a cover here. But Wake's a lot better than Boston College. But they came out sleepy for that game. You know, an afternoon game, you know, sandwiched around a lot of marquee game. So, you know, it's I do think that they come out flat, but I mean, this team, it seems they just can turn it on at any time, and they're scary to fade. So staying away here, or do you think you're gonna
I'm gonna stay away here. I think this has backdoor written all over it, and plus I think this might be one of those games that might leak out to 23-24. So, you know, maybe it's one of those things where I sit around and it's 7-0 Clemson right off the bat, and I'll take Wake for even more live. I think it's going to be a live game for me, because if I'm going to get a backdoor cover from Wake, I'm going to want to get a little bit more points.
Fair enough. Another top five team playing at noon is Oklahoma in Norman. They're hosting Iowa State. Don't think that line's touched 28 yet. I think it's hanging right below there, but they're right around 4 touchdown favorite. What do you see here?
Yeah, so I've got the line at 23. S&P Plus has it at 23, so there's obviously value on Iowa State here at 27.5, but there's a reason why the number's that high, and that's because Iowa State is one of the worst teams in the country at defending the pass. I think Baker Mayfield's on a mission just to win the Heisman and put up as much gaudy numbers as he possibly can. Iowa State is 122nd in third down conversions allowed. So for that alone, I'm not buying in on the Cyclones in this.
Yeah, and I believe that Iowa State has injuries in their defensive backfield as well. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, even more of a nightmare. And Oklahoma's coming off of a bye.
Yep, and into the Red River rivalry. Yep.
Yeah, so I know, and I think they were, you know, they're coming off a game where they underperformed against Baylor. Now bye week, you expect a focused effort here, and from a matchup perspective, heavily favors the Sooners against that Iowa State secondary, which is just horrendous and also banged up. So yeah, I completely agree on your take on that game. Other top five team playing at noon: Penn State at Northwestern. Nittany Lions over 2 touchdowns, laying 14.5 here. What do you see here?
So I'm supposed to like Northwestern in this spot, playing at home, playing the home dog 2 touchdowns again, like they were against Wisconsin. And Fitzgerald did everything he could to get that cover against Wisconsin. But Penn State is they're just playing untouchable football. And I know that Iowa game was close, but I think that was more of a Kinnick thing because they killed him in the box score. Penn State, when Franklin took over the job in 2014, he lost to Northwestern in 2014. He lost to Northwestern in 2015. And he's the kind of coach that holds grudges. He doesn't forget anything. And I think he'll remember that, and I think he's going to try to put it up on Northwestern. Northwestern's rush defense is really soft. They're 104th in opponents' third down conversion percentage. They're 125th in sacks given up on their offensive line. That's just not good against this Penn State team that can really get ahead of you pretty fast.
Yep, I tend to agree. The fourth top five teams, we've covered Clemson, Oklahoma, Penn State, that plays at noon is Georgia. So UGA is at Vandy. So they are Penn State and Georgia, the two teams that are on the road here at noon. They're at Vandy, laying, I believe, 17.5 currently. Any reason to back the doors here? Georgia seems a little overvalued.
Yeah, well, this is it. This is the team. This is finally, if you ask me which one of these dogs early in the day am I going to take, this is it. I'm going to take Vanderbilt. And the reason is because, you know, I mean, they're atrocious on a lot of parts of the ball, both sides. But what they're good at is having a passing defense. They rank in the top 20, a lot of categories on passing defense. So what does that mean? This could be turned into a ground game on both sides of the ball, which means there could just be a lot of short gains, moving the chains, eating clock. And that's kind of showing up in the total here. The total, I believe, opened up north of 42, and it's down to 40.5. But the side hasn't changed at all. It's 17.5. So really what you're looking at here is, with a short total, that 17 points is actually a lot more valuable than just 17 points, say, if it was a 70-point total of a game. So covering the 17 in a 40-point game is usually a winning situation. Also, another thing is Vanderbilt is ranking 6th in the country and not allowing sacks. So they should have time to run the ball. Their quarterback should have time to make decisions. And Georgia's played a couple of high-profile games in a row where they've just played balls to the wall, and you know they can't keep that up forever. You can ask any team, doing this 3 times in a row is not easy. And this is an 11 a.m. Nashville kick. So this isn't some prime time event where everybody's going to be jazzed out and ready to go. This is a great sleepy spot where I don't think there's going to be a lot of points scored, and there's a lot of value in 17.5.
Yep, I would agree. Vandy's one of my favorite spots this week, as well as that under. I mean, I can see this game being like 13-6. It could be ugly. Your point about the 17.5 in a low total is extremely valid. And a perfect example of that is Connecticut was plus 17. They were catching 17 last week at SMU in a game where the total was 70. I had the over, barely hit, 75, 76. Uh-huh. And that game was tied in the fourth quarter, but SMU covered. They won by 21. And then that game, there were just points all over. So, you know, you still didn't feel comfortable with 17 in the, you know, going into the fourth quarter, you know, on a spread, a total that was close to 80. So your point is extremely valid that that's 17 in a total of 40 in a game that's expected to be extremely low scoring. This goes back to the point we made last week on the podcast with teasers and when they actually can be valuable, and they're a lot more valuable when the total's lower. So I would agree with you there. And something to keep in mind, Georgia did go into Tennessee and win in every single phase of that game, but it wasn't a complete victory because they did have some injuries on defense, I believe. They lost. Who did they lose on defense, or is questionable?
I had to flip my page. I got Reggie Carter, doubtful. Trenton Thompson, both on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, Trenton Thompson is probably their best defender, and you know, Reggie Carter, starting linebacker. So keep an eye on there. I believe Carter is doubtful. Thompson would be a huge loss. And the one last point I'll make on this game is you were mentioning some of the numbers on Vandy, and some of them do look promising in this matchup. Some of them that aren't as promising, if you look at it, you have to keep in mind that they're going to be skewed by that Bama game where they just got ran over, and you know, it skewed a lot of their stats in the wrong direction. So, you know, they're not as bad statistically when you dive into the metrics when you actually remove that game. But yeah, I would agree with you that this is the tastiest dog at noon.
Let me throw something else in there too. So there may be a couple of hashtag college kickers into this. Vanderbilt has, you know, possibly one of the worst field goal percentages in all of FBS. And that's going to start coming up more and more on our podcast. And the reason is because I'm looking at the forecast, I'm staring at 14 mile an hour crosswinds. Now that's really important to pay attention to when you look at your diagrams and you get your weather. Wind doesn't mean shit. I mean, it could be straight ahead when you kick your field goals. It could be straight in your face, but for two quarters, you're going to get it straight ahead. But Vanderbilt Stadium is just like Ohio State. We're going to talk about this about them later. If there's crosswind in the stadium and it's more than 15 miles an hour, you could just cancel field goals out completely.
Yep, that's a great point. Moving on to another game. You covered this in your preview, your preseason preview, and this is a potential spot where Ole Miss just gets flattened. You know, they're, you know, a team that's not eligible for anything. They're getting rolled now at Auburn, laying three touchdowns. It looks like they're starting to put it together. Does Auburn roll here?
Yeah, I don't think anybody's written a ticket on Ole Miss. Nobody's written a ticket on Ole Miss, but Pinnacle's still sitting at 21. So I'm kind of waiting for that to tick. But yeah, other than that, there's nothing in here that backs Ole Miss. Their total defense, 101st in the nation. It's getting worse by the week. They're 110th in turnover margin. They're not taking care of the ball. They're not hustling for the ball. 93rd in opponents' yards per play. That's bad. I mean, these are extremely bad numbers. Meanwhile, Auburn, that offensive explosion they had at Missouri was not a fluke. They had it last week again, and they're still third in the country in yards per play. They are right on par to they can get through some of this schedule. They get to Alabama. I saw the game of the year. Did you see the old Bet Online, Todd Furman tweet out there that it was LV, the Westgate. He tweeted out that the Westgate had Bama minus 10 game of the year against Auburn. I was like, that is way too high. It was 4 before the season started. I'm actually scrolling through my numbers here as I keep them up to date the entire year. Yeah, I've got it 5.5. So if I was hanging around Vegas and I could get a chance to get that Auburn plus 10, I'd probably roll by the Westgate and take a little bit of that.
Yeah, I would think that's definitely way too. I would love a piece of 10. I think that Auburn is just going to continue to improve, and they're going to go up in perception and value. So I think that line would drop by the time we get there because Alabama can't really do anything to increase their perception. They're beating teams by 60. And they're not going to play anyone, you know, they can't have a huge, they're not going to have another marquee game. So if they start winning by, what are they going to start winning by, 100? I mean, their perception is at an all-time high.
The way that I grade power ratings at the end of each week, I don't care who they play and how much they beat them by. Even when they just beat Ole Miss by 5,000 points, I didn't mark them up in their PR by more than a point. I think I only gave them a half a point because, I mean, they're doing what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I would tend to agree. And, speaking of Bama, they are, so we can round out the top, cover the entire top five now. They're at Texas A&M. I think they're dealing with more injuries on that defense, Alabama. That's something that does continue to linger for the Tide. They're at Texas A&M laying 26. My gut here says A&M covers. I don't think they even have a prayer to win, but I don't know. What do you see here?
Yeah, you're right. Injuries. We got Deshaun Hand on the defensive line. He's out. Trevin Diggs, defensive back. He's out. So there are some injuries there. But, you know, Texas A&M's got a couple of their own. Their quarterback, Kubiak, he's probable for this game, coming back from that injury. You know, the number's too high, but all these Alabama numbers are too high. I mean, it was too high last week when they had Ole Miss at 28. It just – how contrarian are you feeling, you know? I mean, it seems to be the same thing every time where Texas A&M gets hyped up for this game. I could tell you that my PR is 18. Texas A&M is an S&P Plus. They're 19. ESPN FPI is 20. So, you know, the number's way too high, and it just depends on if you want to gamble with this or not. You know, I don't think Alabama has any look ahead. You know, I don't think anything's stopping from Nick Saban from destroying A&M, but I haven't read anything in the media where anybody's pissing Saban off. So it's like I said last week, if you're pissing Saban off or somebody in the media is saying, hey, Ole Miss beat you two out of the last 3 years, well, then he's going to come out and make an example of you. But I haven't seen anything to that effect. So do you want to take
it
value?
It feels like a game where they're just not as sharp. I don't know. It's really a gut feel thing and intuition, yeah. Your numbers from a power rating perspective seem to have value as well. You're getting, you know, two pretty decent key numbers in 21 and 24 compared to that 19 and 20. So something to keep an eye on. I will say that with the CW9 piece that I mentioned earlier that comes out on Friday will feature Miami at Florida State and Michigan State at Michigan. So we'll hold off on those games, cover them on the CW9. Another game that I wanted to cover here is Oregon State at USC. Oregon State, you want to talk about, they're the Ravens of college football. You want to talk about a team that's just been crushed by injuries. They're at USC, who's coming off a loss. USC's been, they play down to everyone. They've come out flat every week. Is this the week they just come out and drill somebody?
It's interesting. I was thinking about that. This should be – they get some home cooking. They finally get back at home after those two road games at Cal and Washington State. They should be pissed off after losing to Washington State. And my question about this is USC has plenty of players on their injury report. So do they play a full four-quarter game? Is the better bet here that the first half they go balls out and try to, you know, do everything they can to put up as many points against an Oregon State team that's missing, you know, their star running back? You know, I kind of lean to the under in this game because I think at some point the scoring gets shut off, and I kind of lean to the first half USC line if I had to take something in this game.
Yeah, and keep in mind also that with, you know, USC, Darnold trying to bounce back, Xavier Crawford is out, their best corner for Oregon State. Their whole defensive backfield is ravished with injuries. I mean, that team has been just absolutely crushed. Their quarterback's out too, so Oregon State's starting quarterback's out. So yeah, they're just depleted, and I don't know. I think, but the thing is, USC hasn't proved to me that they're going to come out and with a focus. Okay, but maybe after a loss, this is the spot. I'm going to look at USC some more, and then, you know, possibly play them. I think it's USC Trojans or nothing this week. Go ahead.
Yeah, Oregon State's the worst in the country in their turnover margin, so that USC's going to get gifts. They're probably, Or Oregon State's averaging, I think, two turnovers per game, so they're going to give USC opportunities to make it a good game.
Yep. We'll also say Washington State, Oregon, we'll cover on the CW9. Let me throw two games at you. You tell me which one you like, if any. Notre Dame at UNC, UNC catching 14. I know Notre Dame's quarterback, Wimbush, is questionable here. And then West Virginia at TCU, another spread that's right around two touchdowns. You see any value in either of these dogs?
I have nothing in West Virginia. This is a game they should lose. I've got their season win total under, so I'm pulling for TCU here. Little scared Kenny Hill's going to blow a game because he hasn't yet so far. I actually see more value in UNC. The reason is because Wimbush is listed as questionable, but his injury is in his foot. So even if he does play, how mobile is this kid going to be, and how much can he push off and make throws? I'm a little worried about that. Plus, Notre Dame's two running backs are also on the injury report. So, you know, UNC's numbers aren't pretty, and they haven't played pretty today, but I'll take 14.5 on these guys against a Notre Dame team that's missing their key pieces.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. How about Rapid Fire? And another thing in the CW9 and also in the six-pack, and I think everyone out there already probably knows, it's no surprise that we'll both be on the Rebels. So look out for that. Quick fire to finish out the top 25. Who wins, LSU or Florida?
Florida.
And does Ohio State cover 30.5?
They would might cover 40.5.
Okay. So that should round out the top 25. Now let's get to three and out. First, I want to start with key injuries. So common theme throughout this, but there's a lot of quarterbacks hurt. So just to run through, obviously quarterback's the most important position. Buffalo, Tyree Jackson, he's out there, quarterback. Ball State, I think their entire team is out there, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, offensive guard. Bowling Green, quarterback. BYU's quarterback, I think, tomorrow night is still questionable. I think there's another Detmer now that might go again. Florida State, they both have a lot of injuries. Florida with suspensions. I think that's a lot can be tied back to conditioning, by the way, with all of the time and the weirdness with the weather. Oregon's quarterback out. Indiana, as I said, named the new quarterback. Michigan has O'Korn starting at quarterback. Middle Tennessee State, Stock still expected to be out. Also, Richie James, their best receiver. They're straight fade material without them. Mentioned Notre Dame's quarterback. Also, Utah's quarterback, Huntley. He's doubtful, I believe. So a lot of quarterback injuries across the board. And any that we missed with the injuries?
Yeah. Let me name one off for the degenerates out there. University of Louisiana Lafayette, their quarterback Jordan Davis is questionable. That Idaho number, Idaho -7, that is way too high, but that's a reflection of ULL having their quarterback listed as questionable. So keep your eye on that.
Good point. So just make sure that we're still working through the kinks on how I want to do the injury report. Colin sends me some stuff each Saturday. I'm trying to work out the formatting and all that. So I'll try to keep everyone updated on a lot of those injuries, especially at quarterback for the ones that are questionable. Second down in the three and out. This is a question from Jeff Waterman. Good dude. He's actually out in South Korea now for work. He asked, which undefeated against the spread team would you fade this weekend? So I'll ask you, gun to your head, if you had to fade one of the undefeated against the spread teams this week, so across NFL or college, that's SMU, Utah, Buffalo Bills, and the Kansas City Chiefs, which one are you fading?
It's Chiefs with a close Bills in the second place.
I would agree. I would go Bills, Chiefs in second place. So I completely agree there. Yeah, I think you mentioned earlier on the podcast, Ed Oliver for Houston, he's out for the year.
Yeah.
That's a big loss. But, yeah, so SMU looked really good. I think that Stanford beats Utah, but I think there's not a lot of value in taking Stanford.
No.
I can see Utah possibly sneaking in for a late cover or something. I don't think they win. One thing to keep in mind is that if Huntley's out, he wasn't expected to be the starter. So it's not like the drop-off is enormous, but their whole offense was built around him. So, I don't think they win, but, you don't necessarily need them to lose to cover. But I would tend to agree with you. Those two NFL teams are the way to go.
The line is really interesting with Utah because the Sunday morning coffee came out. I had Stanford -2.5. Now that didn't take into the fact that Huntley for Utah was going to be doubtful and maybe out of the game. So the line sat at 6.5 all week. And now it is rapidly, if you like Utah, get in on it because it's rapidly taking a dive right now. And it might end up right around a field goal by the time it kicks off. I still like Stanford to win this game. So there could be a little cover of a small home dog here.
Yep. Tend to agree there. And then on third down, before we sign off here, Moneyline Parlay. I will just go with mine already. The first, we've done this 2 weeks in a row, we're trying to hit one this year, is I faded San Diego State the last 2 weeks with my Moneyline dog. And realistically, they should have lost both games. But I'm going back to the well. UNLV +320. Rebels get it done in Vegas. Who are you rolling with?
I'm rolling with Minnesota. I mean, Minnesota is +4 going down to Purdue. My power ratings and all the other power rating services I see, they've got Minnesota as the favorite. I want to know when Purdue got good enough to be favored against Minnesota. Minnesota had one bad week against Maryland. Maryland and their new quarterback, obviously there just wasn't some prep, or maybe they ran out of gas because they've been playing at such a high level. But, you know, they should be able to run the ball all over Purdue. Minnesota should actually be the favorite going in there. And I think we got some injury situations here. Let me look at it real quick. Yeah, David Blau, he's listed as probable. He's coming back. But, I mean, you know, really that could be a good thing for Minnesota if he has one of his typical days from the past. But, you know, there's some other injuries out there for Purdue. But they should not be the favorite in this game. I'm going with Minnesota with confidence.
Wow, that's quite a turnaround from your shaken confidence on Minnesota earlier in the week. So I like it. So Minnesota, Moneyline Underdog Parlay, UNLV, and Minnesota, the Rebels and Gophers payout right around +950. So hopefully we can get this one to the window. It's one of our least aggressive ones. So hopefully we can get this one cashed. Keep an eye out for CW9 on Friday. As I said, six-pack on Saturday. Podcast as always twice a week. We'll have two more next week for week 7. Let's have another profitable weekend, and we'll catch y'all later. Cheers.
Peace out. Some sequins gin. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now this time.